KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro. Fillmore District.
Bernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, SFUSD Superintendent Vincent Matthews draws from his childhood to plan for each and every student in the district.
When I think about that each and every, that's really where the little Vincent comes into place for me.
Then we explore the Bay through sound in this week's Audiograph.
And Swing This Neighbor. Hands are ringing in balance now.
And we answer your questions through our segment, Hey Area.
Did the wave originate at the Oakland Coliseum?
So what's the answer? Find out coming up on Cross Currents. Vincent Matthews has been superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District for a little over 2 years now. His biggest initiative is called Pitch, and it's all about boosting academic outcomes for low-income kids of color, especially African-American students, because as a group, they post the district's lowest math and reading scores. Matthews knows what it's like to be young and Black in public schools here. He's a San Francisco native. So KLW education reporter Lee Romney asked him to drive her around his hometown to talk about his goals, his passions, and his past. He chose four stops: the Bayview School, where he launched his teaching career, his former high school near Twin Peaks, and his elementary school and childhood home, both in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. She takes us along for the ride.
This is a baby stroller, affluent baby stroller neighborhood.
Yeah, now. It wasn't then.
What was it like?
I actually recently saw my kindergarten class photo. And half of it was African American, half the class. We used to play kickball out here.
On the hill, that's on challenging.
Yeah, this is where we played. Oh, wow, one more. This is the house. My grandmother actually owned the house. So she was married to a man who had a number of shoe shine stands all over the city. They lived on the bottom floor. We lived on that middle floor. That was my mother and father's bedroom.
All right. Next stop, Grattan.
Okay, all right. So this is my elementary.
When you were at Grattan, uh-huh. You know, this notion that maybe less was expected of Black students. Mm-hmm. Did you feel any of that?
I'll say I didn't feel it so much at Grattan. I'd say probably 30 to 40% of the school was African American because the neighborhood was completely different than it is now. At Hoover, 5 to 10% were African American, I'd say. And then at McAteer, it was a little higher percentage, but that's where you really felt it. They clearly had tracks, and we were put in the lower tracks because the expectation was that we weren't going to go to college.
We know so much that we didn't know then. Why is it so hard?
You know what? I firmly believe that it isn't that we don't know the necessary skills to make sure that Black students are achieving at the highest levels. The bottom line is, do we have the will to make it happen? And so it's not just a San Francisco issue. This is a United States issue. So, for example, we need high quality teachers in all of our schools, but especially in our most needy schools.
Let's see if I can just get a little picture. Next up, McAteer. I'm not even sure I know where McAteer is.
Oh, well.
Did you come in knowing that this was likely going to be a legacy initiative?
I knew it would be an issue because it's an issue everywhere. I didn't know how big the gap was here in San Francisco. What excited me most, though, was everywhere I went, everybody said, oh, this is what we have to do something about. And I believe that this is what will define us. It's kind of like in Apollo 13, where he said, you know, that people were like, this is a disaster. And then he says, no, this is our finest hour. If it can't be solved here, it'll make me even less convinced that it can be. And I really think it can be.
And part of that is because of wealth, right?
Absolutely. So you have the wealth of the community, as well as the wealth of so many corporations and businesses that either reside here or, you know, just 40 or 50 miles away down in Silicon Valley.
Does little Vincent Matthews ever pop into your mind?
All the time.
How?
So our mission as a district is that every day, for each and every student, we will provide quality instruction and equitable support so that they can thrive in the 21st century. So when I think about that each and every, That's really where the little Vincent comes into place for me. I think about what people did for me. When I first went to McAteer, I was in my sophomore year, and my mother had to come up to the school to make sure that the school was preparing me to go to college, because we just assumed that McAteer would do that. On a Tuesday, I was in classes with students who looked just like me, and basically all of us were in classes that weren't really preparing us for college. And on Wednesday, my courses were all flipped, and now all of a sudden, I'm in classes with students who look nothing like me.
Were you like the only black boy in those classes?
Absolutely. And so I want to make sure that we are not making determinations on students where we believe they're going to go based on what they look like. So this is McAteer right here. The high school closed, and then it became two schools. That's where we hung out. Oh. We can park right here.
So you would take the bus up here?
Yep. Part of that is, you know, as a young African-American male in this area, you didn't want to hang around. And the hang around is because people have suspicions of young African-American males. And if I stayed up here too long, it wouldn't be long before the police would be here. I was involved in sports, so I would be here after school in those arenas. And then if you came off the campus, it was getting on the bus and getting home.
Sounds like you had some of the teachers here at McAteer, right? That really made a difference.
Absolutely. Mr. Disgrazzi, he was my junior social studies teacher. He asked people if they wanted an application to run for office. And my senior year, he handed me an application, and I took it home, and then I decided I wasn't going to run. And I brought it back the next day. And he said, nope, you took it home. Now you have to run. So what he realized is that if you're applying for college, being an officer is going to help you get into college. So he pushed, and then I actually won and became vice president of the senior class. And I was one of two African-Americans in all of student leadership.
I don't know if there was one moment, but if there was a moment when you realized, I want to be an educator.
I was a student at McAteer. I'd hide my books from my friends because I didn't want them to know I was studying. It was a cool thing to study. You were called names, Little White Boy, because white was associated with education. So I hid my books, but I studied. I played football, ran track. So I knew that my friends didn't have the skills that I had. What I did was started tutoring them after school, hanging out at McAteer, actually. Underneath, there's a dome there. Underneath the dome, and somehow I could explain it where clearly they struggled with the way the teachers were explaining it. For me, that's like electricity. It's just like juice. And that was the spark for me that said, yeah, you know what? I think I want to be a teacher. The selfish reason was I wanted our team to win. I like winning. I wanted them on the team.
They wouldn't have been able to be on the team if they were failing.
No,
that was
it. You had to have a C average, and they struggled to keep a C average.
Yeah.
Carver?
Yeah. Okay. Stop Carver.
That is where we're headed now, George Washington Carver. The 5 years that I taught there, all low-income kids of color, all African-American, yet we have the highest rate of proficiency in the entire district. So I know that low-income kids of color who are taking high-stakes assessments can score at the highest levels.
Hitch looks a lot at the gap in, you know, quote-unquote achievement using those scores. That's not the only way to define achievement.
Absolutely, we're looking at multiple measures. But at the end of the day, it's not scores as much as it is students' ability to demonstrate that they have mastered skills. Now, ultimately, that comes out to a score. If I can show you that, hey, the school climate is going up and students feel good about themselves, but then their rate of reading, and if they've mastered 10% of those skills, then we, in my estimation, we haven't done our jobs. What we did is we took 20 schools, 10 schools that we call historically underserved, which have a large percentage of African-American students in them, and then 10 other schools that are high gap schools. These are schools that if you look at the average rate of proficiency, which is usually in the 70 to 80% range, people would say, oh, that's a good school. But then you look at the gap, it's really 90, 95% for white students and Asian students, and 30 to 20% for African-American students. This is where I spent a lot of my time in the Bayview Hunters Point.
Oakdale and 3rd, right in the heart of the Bayview.
Right, so I spent a lot of time here on these corners. Talked about getting in trouble. even though we lived in the Haight-Ashbury, our church was over here. If you grow up Baptist in the 60s, you didn't just go to church on Sunday. You went all day Sunday. So I consider this is where I grew up, and that's a big part of why I chose Carver for my first teaching job. Who better to come back and impact a neighborhood than kids who grew up in that neighborhood?
So what was your first day like here?
Scary. I started as a student teacher. So it's getting here and realizing all that you don't know.
Carver's a pitch school.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you see?
Well, I'll talk about pitch schools in general. What we're asking the schools to do, we need you to sit down, you principal, your leadership team, and then your entire staff and community. What is the root cause of low outcomes? So what's the reason for that, African-American students? The second piece then is, what is your theory of action? So let's say you say our root cause is every year we have new teachers, and so the teachers don't have the content knowledge. Our theory of action is, if we're able to make sure our teachers have the content knowledge and the professional development to keep that in them, they'll be able to transfer to that to students. And then what are the strategies you're going to put in place? And then we give you the dollars for that.
And have the dollars started to flow already?
Yes. The first set of dollars flowed in the spring. The next set are flowing now. But we know that if they told us they need to do 7 things, we're able to fund probably 4 of those things. It's still not the funding we need. There's so many needs on top of just the academic needs. It's not a level playing field. What we have to do is do everything we can inside of our system to make it as level as possible.
Was the mural here when you were here?
No, the mural was not. The mural was not here, and I love it. So it is George Washington Carver, his picture, and then on each side of him, to the left or the right, is the periodic table. Then it says at the bottom, education is the key to unlock the golden door of freedom. And so much, I absolutely believe that. Absolutely. And that's what this is all about.
That was Vincent Matthews, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, speaking with KELW's education reporter, Lee Romney. He spoke with Lee as part of her ongoing series, Learning While Black, the fight for equity in San Francisco schools. You can find the rest of her reporting online at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Henat Baba. Next up, an audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature.
And swing this neighbor. Hands in a ring in balance now. Spin to the right. Raven, lead your neighbor out.
The thing that's nice about the gender neutral is you can dance with anyone.
Shadow a neighbor. Back to your partner. Partners.
Though that might sound like a square dance, it's actually contra, a social dance with roots in the kind of English country balls that you may have seen in Pride and Prejudice, mixed with lots of moves familiar to square dancers and all set to live string band music. A few years ago, reporter Bonnie Chan went to Oakland to find out what makes this one so unique.
Right shoulder round. And swing this neighbor.
It's a Friday night at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Oakland, and the hall is packed. But this is not a religious service.
Start to the right with your shadow and neighbor. Back to your partner. Partners, swing.
It's Circle Left Contra Dance, a monthly social gathering that brings people together to twirl, swing, and do-si-do their hearts out.
Some people describe it as a bit like a square dance, but instead of dancing with just the people in your square, you're actually dancing with the entire room.
That's Yo-Yo Joe, one of the main organizers of Circle Left. He started the event with friends 3 years ago.
The norm in contra dancing is that you change partners every dance, so there's only a small amount of embarrassment that you have to endure with one partner before you move on to the next.
There are lots of contra dance socials in the Bay Area, but Circle Left is the only one that's gender neutral, which means that the traditional dance roles for ladies and gents are replaced with roles called ravens and larks.
There are a lot of people who are less comfortable with the standard language of contra dancing, which is important because the caller might be telling you to do something as the ladies or the gents, and there's nothing inherent about one's gender that applies to the dance moves that you're doing.
The thing that's nice about the gender neutral is you can dance with anyone.
This is Del Powell, a longtime contra dancer.
I can dance both parts, so anyone here I can dance with.
The room is filled with stomping and clapping as dancers swing their partners around. There are all kinds of fashion statements here. People rocking braided beards, silk shirts, cowboy boots, clogs and ballet flats. And there are also plenty of flying skirts on both men and women, courtesy of a skirt table in the back of the hall.
A lot of times there's like new people who've never been here before that get really excited about the skirt table and have never worn skirts before, and so that's a cool opportunity. And I think it's something that makes the dance a little bit queer and more gender inclusive and exciting.
And Circle Left is no place for wallflowers. If you come to this contra dance, you better be ready to take a spin with pretty much everybody in the room. And if you don't know how to do the dance sequence, don't worry. Just follow what the caller's telling you to do.
It might sound something like this. With your neighbor, balance and swing.
With these neighbors, circle left, circle left. Great place.
Join hands, circle to the left.
Balance now, California world, your neighbor, balance and swing.
I love coming because it's a really welcoming community. So it's like easy to join in.
A couple of dancers sitting at one of the songs told me it's the community aspect that keeps them coming to Circle Left. And one thing you might notice about the room is that everyone is grinning, even the beginners who are facing the wrong way.
It's not like other dance situations where you're kind of like not sure what you're supposed to do, or like you feel like people are judging you.
I didn't know what I was getting into at all.
Is this your first night?
Yes. And I like the spinning part.
There's a beginner's class before each Circle Left event, just in case you want a little introduction before the main event gets underway. And if all else fails and you get a little lost out there on the dance floor, Yo-Yo Joe's got some advice. When someone comes up to you with their hands out, just grab onto them and enjoy the ride. In Oakland, I'm Bonnie Chan for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Bonnie. The music you heard in this piece was by the Raggedy Anns, and if you want to take a spin as a raven or a lark, the next Circle Left Contra Dance is this Friday, August 9th, in downtown Oakland. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Well, baseball season is well underway, and both the Giants and the A's are vying for playoff positions. And if you've been to a game recently, you may have been part of a cheer where everyone in the stadium stands up and sits down in succession, what most people call the wave. Well, as part of our crowdsourced journalism project, Hey Area, where you ask the questions and we find the answers, Romeo Rodriguez had this question.
Did the wave originate at the Oakland Coliseum?
Reporter Bo Walsh went to find the answer.
This is crazy, George, and I want to tell you it's a fact. I don't claim it. It did start in Oakland at the Oakland A's New York Yankee playoff game, October 15th, 1981. There has never been a wave before that date.
October 15th, 1981. More than 47,000 fans of the Oakland A's say goodbye.
It was the third game in the series, and we needed something big. I started the cheer in the fifth inning because I thought it would change the momentum of the game. It was still 0-0. And the crowd never saw anything like this before.
Now the next question is just how inhibiting this will be, whatever it is.
I knew what I wanted, but the fans did not know what I wanted, and I had to train them.
Fans, under the direction of Crazy George out here, having themselves a good evening and enjoying baseball, enjoying the Coliseum and not hurting anybody.
And then what happened is 2 weeks later, the University of Washington, they saw it. Then they did the wave after that in every game. After they did it, they would be doing it against other colleges. The other colleges started doing it. And it spread from there, so they helped spread it. But I invented it, and I did it October 15th. They did October 31st. But they still claim to this day, some of them, that they invented it.
Thanks, Bo. Anything you're curious about, our reporters may just be able to find an answer for you. Ask your question at kalw.org and click Hey Area. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter to get all our stories and interviews and more in your inbox every week. And tune in to Cross Currents Monday at 5. Every year, the San Francisco Chronicle coordinates coverage of homelessness with media outlets throughout the Bay Area. This year, in a series of talks called Chronicle Talks Homelessness, San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo will talk about his plan to tackle the issue of homelessness in the South Bay. You can listen to part of that conversation Monday at 5 on Cross Currents.
Life was bleak and all I saw was darkness. Aimlessly I wandered through the days. Lonely as a cloud, I prayed each night aloud for love to shine its light and show the way.
This music is by Meredith Axelrod from San Francisco. She's doing an early evening show at Atlas Cafe this Saturday.
Till I read a message in the stars.
It must have been moon glow.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Taylor Caldwell, Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Ariella Markowitz, Kristen McCandless, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, Michael Lockswingen, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Oh, Lord, please let this last. We seem to flow right through the air. A heavenly song seemed to come from